Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for January 16th, which is also MLK Day. Did you know that?
I did know that. Oh, sweet okay. Princess, I knew that.
Well, I'm just going to accuse you of being racist, but...
All of our parishioners have the day off, so...
Oh, that means they're going to be calling us.
Right, so we should...
We should go hide in the cupboard. I'm just kidding. We love all the people in our church. We're not going to really talk about MLK today because we, I didn't have anything to say about it.
Well, you wrote a really good article, I thought, about
it. Oh, I did write an article.
Yeah.
So you could read that. But that was the substance of everything that I had to say.
Right. On Pythias. Your Pythias book. It was really good, I thought.
Thank you.
One of the best articles you've written.
Thank you.
I'm really impressed.
I obviously put a lot of thought into it.
Well, we have a wonderful friend who's a professor at BU who's writing a book about about slavery
it's particularly about the largest slave auction that took place in American history. It was 400 plus slaves were sold in 2 days. So she follows that. She tells the story of that particular auction, and she read an excerpt of it, which was really amazing.
Yeah, it's a scholarly book, and it's going to come out, I think she said, with Cambridge Press, and the party was kind of to listen to her read the first chapter and also give money to a charitable organization that she supports, which is really great to do for her birthday. But she read this story about this.
She read the first chapter.
Right, and it was fascinating. She was tracing the lives of different strands of lives of slaves and slave owners. And in particular, she mentioned this couple that the night before they knew they were going to go on the auction block, had a minister marry them so that they could be sold together, which I thought was fascinating. Not that they would do that, but that...
There was some kind of... Like, they were splitting up all these families with impunity, like, but they had this sort of residual
attention if they would to split marriage. Apart brother, sister, uncles, no problem. But this marriage, the slave auctioneers had decided not to break up married couples.
Just this one time.
Every auction, but in this auction that was the way it was. And it's remarkable that because to recognize marriage means in some level these people understood, the slave holders and sellers and traders understood that these two people were human.
Were people, yeah.
Yeah. And yet at the same time...
They weren't recognizing.
They weren't recognizing because while they were on the block being sold, you know, people...
They were looked over like cattle.
Like cattle, their teeth, does this woman hips? Does this woman have hips that can bear children? I mean, it was so incoherent. I mean, buying and selling people at the same time, recognizing a marriage as legitimate because they're human beings, and it just, the depravity of the whole slave trade was just laid bare at that point.
I mean, the book was really helpful just hearing this one chapter, I look forward to reading the book, it is sort of an intellectual, I think it's something that you think about intellectually, but the way that our friend told the story just makes it immediate and brings it right into your face.
And she's a Christian. She knows how to do that.
I mean, it was just really...
She knows how to bring home the evil and the grace in a situation, which is really...
Really amazing.
But that inspired your article.
Yeah. So I wrote... Well, I know this wasn't what we were going to talk about, but no, I think you should give a 2-second you've said this at Good Shepherd a lot, but people did use the Bible to justify this really hideous activity in America and in the West. So clarify for us why that was a really bad reading of the Bible, and when the word slave is used in the Bible, what does it mean?
Well, in the Old Testament, the word for slave has a huge range of meaning. It could mean... you could use it for a prime minister under an emperor. I mean, anyone who is submitted to another could be considered, or you could use the same Hebrew word for slave. But when you read the regulations and the laws that God gives regarding quote-unquote slavery in the Old Testament, what you find is it's an institution that was given primarily to help the impoverished. It's designed so that no Israelite, for example, we'll talk about foreigners in a minute, so that no Israelite will ever die of starvation or hunger. If you cannot support yourself, you can go to your wealthy neighbors and ask them to take you in and pay for your food, clothing, shelter, all of that in exchange for work. And you're not that person's property either. What's interesting is the whole system is designed to not only enable a poor person to find help when he needs it for him and his family, it also is designed to ultimately put that person back into the community with a healthy new start. At the end of the 7 years, when the slave is released, he's sent off with his master by his former master, quote unquote, with enough goods and the ability to start his own life back again. Mm-hmm. He can't just be sent out with nothing. You can't kidnap or take a person into slavery against their will, and that's both for Israelites and for foreigners. You can't kidnap or steal a man and make him be your slave.
And that undoes
everything.
That just undoes everything.
Right, because that's everything that the Mid-Atlantic trade slave was grounded upon was kidnapping
and stealing
men and selling them against their will.
If you stole somebody, what was the penalty for that?
Death.
So stoning. If your quote slave ran away, and you went to get him back.
Right, that's another thing. If a slave runs away and first of all, where he goes must harbor him, and if someone comes and tries to take him back, they're to be stoned. Yeah. So there's no that both those laws undo the idea that slavery was a kind of chattel property system.
In the Bible.
Bible, right. So there's a lot of it's a complicated topic, and there are some elements of the Levitical law on slavery that when you first read the law seem very troubling, but then when you understand the context and what's going on, it's much less so. In fact, maybe we can link. There's a really good study out there that I link when I talk about this. So when you put this podcast up, I can maybe link it for you, and your reader can look at it.
Our listener.
Listener, yes. And your reader.
And my reader.
I wonder if they're the same person or not. But
mm-hmm. It's my mother.
That's right.
In both cases.
Right. And in the New Testament era, I mean, slavery in the New Testament era was a bit different because it wasn't under the Levitical code. It was the Roman slavery. But even then, there were some marked differences between that and the antebellum slavery. In particular, it wasn't always of the chattel kind, where people are just torn into hard backbreaking labor and ripped from their families. That happened in the Roman era, but mostly what we see addressed in the scriptures is not that kind of slavery, but the urban sort of slavery, where in Rome, for example. One way to get ahead financially and to survive socially, if you're an impoverished freeman, would be to sell yourself into slavery for a wealthy family, and you would have, again, food, healthcare, shelter, and it would behoove a wealthy Roman not to mistreat you, because it was looked down upon to do that, for one, and you didn't. Not saying this is good at all, but. To own a slave is a bit like owning a car, and you would want your car to look nice.
That's horrible.
No, but that's the way they thought of it, though.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't make sense for the Roman, even though he shouldn't be owning a person.
Yeah.
To
have, be brutal.
And have the person always running around and right. So often if you sold yourself into slavery to an urban person, you learn a trade. You learn, you may even get an education. And most likely the majority of them were given freedom after about 20 years or maybe even shorter. And they would then have
to make a living
right above what they had before they entered. So that's to get out of slavery in some cases would mean impoverishment and starvation. So when Paul doesn't immediately say all masters must release all their slaves, as some modern readers want him to do, mm-hmm. what they don't understand is for Paul to do that would mean real horrible
economic destruction.
Yeah, for the slaves. Mm-hmm. So there was some reasons why you wouldn't in the first century do that, mm-hmm. and why no slave would want you to do, or a few slaves would want you to do that. He does of course take Christianity and apply it to the slave master relationship. And transform it, I think, in a way that means ultimately
you end up you can't have slaves.
Ultimately, and that the master must treat his slave as a brother.
That undermines the whole thing.
right. So I think ultimately there's if you apply the New Testament understanding of slavery in that context to something like the antebellum system, there's no. It wouldn't exist. Mm-hmm. There's no way a Christian who's understanding the scriptures and their setting could take the Bible and justify anything that we see manifesting itself in the Mid-Atlantic slave trade.
But
kidnapping people, taking them to their families, selling them, treating them like animals.
Yeah.
Right.
I think America has a sort of a charism for really cruddy readings of the Bible.
You're right. And that another thing that's interesting is that neither ancient Roman slavery was not based on race either.
Yeah.
Whereas on top of the kidnapping and destroying families and using human beings like animals in the antebellum South and the North too, before anti-slavery revolution. On top of that was this racial component, mm-hmm. that was already alive and well in the 19th century, where white people were seeing themselves as more highly evolved.
So the interesting nexus between we do have this civil war, we begin to have this idea of freedom, but right as that is happening. Because what year was the Civil War?
1861.
What year did Darwin arrive on the scene? You have this sort of interesting, it's like they meet up, where true charity and love dwell. In this case, where real racism and atheism and eugenics dwell, there we get to have this furthering racism, it's like it picked up where,
right.
just as you were beginning to have freedom and personhood, then you get eugenics.
For all of you who think that science is the ultimate determiner of truth, take a little time capsule or take a little time trip back to, the mid beginning of the 20th century or end of the 19th, not even the mid 20th century, you can go back, the beginning of the 20th century, you can go to the mid 20th century, you can go to the later parts of the 20th century, you'll still find that people are using the findings of evolution
to justify
racial
ugliness.
So I just
want to bring this home. I've been really wanting to blog about this and I haven't really had time, and I'm going to put this picture up some point, but a friend snapped a picture of our local Unitarian church here, and on the sign, I'm just going to read the sign here, it says
Did you get the picture? I've been wanting a picture.
Yeah, I got the picture. On the sign, well, it says Unitarian Universalist Congregation. Underneath, where you can put the letters in yourself, it says Margaret Sanger, Cultivating Courage, and then somebody named Jean Rose Klein. I guess that's the person who's talking. And then, this is, that's under, by the sign, somebody has carefully stuck a little, it looks like a little political sign, like you would have a political name on it, but it says Black Lives Matter.
And we Which is to, absurd.
We drive by this. I don't know when they're going to take it down, but
oh my gosh,
the absurdity of having a nice little sign that says Black Lives Matter next to a big neon, whatever, lit up Margaret Sanger Cultivating Courage is...
Right, because Margaret Sanger is one of those people who believe that whites were the climax of the evolutionary process, at least as it was. So in order to better the race... We need to get rid of the lower races, right? So we don't want inbreeding with the more primitive and less evolved humans, because that's just going to bring more poison into our bloodstream and dilute our genetics. And that's not, you know, Margaret Sanger didn't just, you know, make that up. Have you ever read the full title of the
Origin of Species? Yeah, I have.
It's the origin, on the origin of species by means of natural selection, or the preservation of favored races in the struggle for life. Charles Darwin, 1859.
That's really sweet. That's just perfect.
The preservation of favored races, right? And so, yeah. Hitler just, and the Nazis just took that logic to its...
Yeah, logical.
Right, so their understanding was, of course, the Germans are the master race, so we've got to, for the good of humanity... destroy those lesser...
So what I think is really, you know, is so interesting to listen to our friend read this, and she really drew out how slavery was the destruction. It was the destruction of the person, certainly, and the person's body and their volition and their will. But it was also the utter destruction of the family. It was slavery in America was particularly designed or pointed towards the destruction of the family. And the destruction of relationships. And I've really been grieved over this year, as we've had you know, the Black Lives Matter movement say Black Lives Matter. Of course that statement is true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Black lives really do matter, and I even agree that when you are trying to destroy, you know, in the face of this sort of seeming ongoing destruction of, say, of Black lives, you should say that. You know, it doesn't help to go around saying White Lives Matter right now.
Or even All Lives Matter, because of course they do, but...
But right now, right. Of course, it's helpful. It can be helpful to say Black lives do matter. What's hideous about that is that the Black Lives Matter movement accepts abortion as a way of saying that Black lives matter. And for me, I think that's so, what's the word I'm looking for? You can't, those two things don't go.
It's asinine.
It's asinine. That's a contradiction. And it's almost ironic, you know, it's like these, you know, these slave owners acknowledging the marriage of a young Black couple, mm-hmm. you know, saying they acknowledge their humanity that far,
mm-hmm.
But they're ripping families apart. So that's an it's interesting irony in that picture.
That's what I really found was interesting about. We had a young woman who has just had a child, and she gave her, she's the head of our missions committee at church, and she gave a mission update yesterday during church, and she was talking about how abortion rips apart any good movement that might be seeking to help people who are poor or
mm-hmm.
or isolated or alienated from a society. So Black Lives Matter, the desire to work for equality for black people and to fight against racism is great, but then embracing, as they do in that movement, abortion. It destroys it.
It destroys the very thing that they are saying, which is a good thing to say. So I also think, you know, it was helpful. I just think the reverberations of, okay, so, you know, we had slavery in this country and in the West, and the destruction of, you know, it had reverberations throughout Africa itself. And then, of course, in American society, the ongoing effects, I think, of slavery, and then the sort of way that it was taken, the racism that was sort of perpetuated through the 1900s, and now, you know, we really, I would say it's even more insidious and hideous, the particular targeting of black communities by Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, yeah.
You have this sort of unbroken thread, it feels like.
But abortion is only 10% of what Planned Parenthood does, because
we have this beautiful ice cream. We've only just put a little bit of poop in the ice cream.
Right, well, I put it on Facebook.
Ice cream is just has a tiny bit of shit in it.
Right? You can't say that on your...
On my own podcast?
Yeah, you just...
Well, I, that's what it was. That's what it felt like.
Okay.
I think a bad word in this case is justified.
I'm going to have to edit that out. This is a family show.
I don't think children are listening.
Have you read Colossians?
I have, but you can't just throw Bible.
What you've just done is a sin, so you should confess that.
I'm
and repent
sorry.
Because, okay,
it's gross.
I can't believe you said that.
Really?
Yeah, I'm really having a hard time going on with the show now. But it is like saying, what percentage of the Nazi Party was geared toward exterminating the Jews? You know, not many. I mean, the vast bulk of the work of the Nazi Party was ensuring that the Germans had full employment and healthcare for all Germans, subsidized by the German government. Only a small part of what they did was exterminating 6 million Jews for the health of the nation. Right?
Okay,
it doesn't matter what other good you do.
Yeah, if you're doing
when you're
something
systematically
really, really
murdering people.
Yeah, that's really gross. Okay, but also,
Jack,
like,
the Ripper
think
was
about...
a really good cartographer. He really, he made wonderful maps. And who cares?
Okay, but the reverberations for that, for what happened, you know, to the Jewish people in the Holocaust, even though it looked really nice and shiny outside, that had ripple effects throughout the community. When you're systematically killing people. That has, even
wait,
if
which,
you don't...
What's the shiny part, though?
No. Well, no, like, the rest of Germany, you know, was busy making war machines and eating, you know,
right, and thinking of themselves as making Germany better, right?
Making Germany great again.
Right.
So you have this sort of, it looks nice, it looks fine, but the reverberations of that, the... You can't kill off lots and lots and lots of people and not have it have cultural... consequences throughout the whole community. And I really think in American life we're seeing the ripple effect of the death of so many people, and particularly of minorities. I'm sorry. I don't think that the black community should continue to be a minority in American life. They
right.
should have all of their babies, and they should I'm not excited about a white majority in the U.S. or, you know, bring on the other colors of people. Obviously, when you're narrowing down a community by, you know, getting people to just kill themselves.
Right. Well, you're persuading impoverished, and this is another thing that young woman said yesterday. I think that was really helpful. You're persuading impoverished people that. It's more costly to have a child than to kill it.
Yeah.
and especially people who are, you know, already thought of as less than a black woman who isn't married, who has is pregnant, right? She's encouraged to slaughter her black child,
which is
so that she can eat, right? And
and yeah, not seeing
the gift of the child.
Yeah, and the ongoing gift to the whole community, to the whole country,
right,
of that person that could have been. So, no, I think...
So, again, this is where we're going back to we get the leaders we deserve. And this is why, you know, people are wondering, why was 2016 so awful? Why do we have these horrible candidates to choose from? Well, because we're a horrible people.
We're horrible. We're horrible.
Right. That's why. And it's not going to get any better until we repent. Right? And even then, it might be too late. Who knows?
Yeah. Oh, but there's going to be this big star that explodes.
Right. I forgot. Yeah,
let's end with that.
That's 2022.
Explain how the apocalypse is going to come in 2022.
Well, apparently in 2022, there's going to be a nova. Not a Chevy nova, but a visible... collision of stars in the night sky. That apparently the collision took place 1,800 years ago.
And we're going to see it finally.
When Rome was beginning their occupation of Scotland. that's someone said match the dates up. That's when this actual collision took place, but because it's so far away, the light is just now going to be reaching us in 2022. And so for 6 months in 2022, you'll be able to see the birth of a new star. And
which it'll is be the just brightest. Like the birth of our Savior.
Well, right, because Rambam, a Jewish mystic in I forget which century.
That's not his actual name.
No, that's a shortened version of his name. I was reading this article about this Jewish mystic named Rambam who says that he wasn't talking about this particular star, but he was saying new stars will appear in the sky, and that will be the sign that the Messiah is coming. The Messianic age is about to begin. So, of course, that means that in 2022, that will be the year
that Jesus comes, is born?
Yeah.
Come again?
Well, I'm telling you, I haven't read yet. I haven't seen Jim Baker or any of the other charlatans who went after the four blood moons talk about
awesome.
It yet. But as soon as it becomes more widely known, I can tell you, we're going to have, it's going to be, the four blood moons thing is going to be nothing compared to the birth of the star that's going to come about and usher in the new era of you know, climactic end times revelation going to happen. Jesus is coming back in 2022. I can tell you, the Lord told me.
Is the temple going to be rebuilt by then?
The temple's going to be rebuilt. We're going to have the red heifer sacrificed to consecrate the temple. And then the Antichrist is going to come. And we're going to all be very happy because that will mean Jesus will come in 7 years.
Except when the world goes up in a ball of fire, that's going to not be super cool.
Well, I mean, this is probably going to be some debates because, you know, there's a 7 year tribulation period.
Maybe that needs to start now.
So, wait, how many years until 2022? I'm bad at math.
Math is hard. Let's go shopping.
So, is the star going to occur in the midst of the tribulation, or is it going to mark the beginning of the tribulation? There's going to have to be lots of debates about that. And one person's going to have to get a word from the Lord saying one thing, and another person's going to have to get a word from the Lord to say something else before we're done to figure this great mystery out.
It's going to be great. You know what?
John Hagee's
actually don't make lots have of money. Enough. The Great Tribulation needed to start in 2015.
Oh, okay.
If that's going to be
I'm saying, but it could take place on the fifth year of the tribulation. You could have the star
coming
forth.
Okay, well, it needs to
and
get
that
going.
Will be, yeah, I know.
We're running out of time.
Right, we are running out of time. John Hagee's going to make a lot of money. I'm trying to think of another person who did
the blood moons. That's dispiriting.
Yeah, it is dispiriting. But so, yeah, it's going to be great. It will be cool, though, to see the star.
Yeah, that will be cool.
Stars collide.
If you're an astronomy person,
yeah.
If you're interested. Yeah. I don't like to look at stars because I have trouble seeing anything beyond a very short distance.
Our oldest son wants a telescope. We should probably invest in one before 2022.
So we can Will he still be with us? I feel like he should be in college then, and
he's only 12.
He's going to be 13, though.
13, 14.
Math is hard.
He'll be in his late teens.
Maybe. Let's go shopping. I think we've covered all the topics today.
All the topics.
This has been really great, and we hope that you'll have a really good week, and that you'll join us next time for another podcast. Thanks so much.